If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Basically. I am your host, Stephanie Preisner, and with me in studio today is Miss Katrina Kerwin, who is an ophthalmic surgeon who has worked in Children's University Hospital, Temple Street, the Mater Private, the Beacon, UPMC in Clane, and who was mentored by Professor Michael O'Keefe, who many of you may know, who was a big favourite of my grandmother and grandfather, who caused him years of torture and issues with their eyes. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Stephanie. We
have listener questions for you, but before we get to those, I guess we should just talk about what your job is, who you see, what the common issues that you see are, and anything else we need to know.
Okay. Well, I'm both an adult and paediatric ophthalmologist. So on a day-to-day basis, I see many adults and children with various eye problems. So common problems I would see in children are children with turns or squints in their eyes, which is strabismus, children who have failed their school eye test, children with watery eyes, or children who suddenly complain that of vague symptoms and parents are worried and ask me to see them. And then in adults...
Do the parents come to you straight away, or would it be referral through a GP?
Sometimes they attend their GP first, but other times it's word of mouth and they ring. They may get a recommendation or be talking to a friend whose child has previously attended me, and then they come to see me. If they ring my office directly, often I'll just see them without a referral.
Oh, cool.
But many times the optometrists see them first or their GP.
Okay, cool. So those are the things that you see most commonly in children.
Yes.
And then what are you seeing most commonly with your adult patients?
Cataracts, really common. People with turns again or strabismus. Often people who have had a history of strabismus surgery or surgery for a turn in their eyes in childhood or a number of years ago, whose eyes have turned again. And then I see them. People with dry eye, increasingly common.
Yeah, often, that's so common at the moment.
Yeah, with today's lifestyle, all the excessive use of computers, phones, it really is taking its toll on people's eyes. So that's a big issue.
Why? Is it because we're looking at light all the time, or because we're looking at something so close? Or
it's basically when you're looking at a screen intently, you don't blink as much and your eyes dry out, and that's an issue. Working from home was actually a factor too. Because people in the office tend to get more to be distracted more by, you know, people coming up, talking to them, chatting. They'll have more reason to turn away from their computer. Whereas during COVID and working from home, often they're fixated on the computer all day long. And then even when people go home from work, they're straight onto their phones. So, or looking at the TV.
And that's causing dry eye.
It is, yeah.
And is it combatable? Or
to a degree. I always advise them to take a break from a computer after about half an hour. Even for a minute, that just gives their eyes a break. They have to stay well hydrated. Omegas, for example, omega-3 in the diet is really important for the health of the eyes, the health of the tears.
Okay.
And so diet does play a role too.
That's
but lifestyle, computers, just take a break.
So you're seeing cataracts, dry eye. What else is kind of common?
Other problems then, people with blepharitis, that's infection and inflammation in the eyelids. That can be an issue. And it causes a lot of irritation of people's eyes.
And is that chronic, or is that like just an eye infection that comes and goes that you would see? Or
it can be chronic. It's treatable to a degree. And I always advise people that when they complete the course of treatment, that there is a degree of management and managing the condition over time to try and help prevent a flare-up. Again, it's just lid hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
And other problems I see are quite common things like macular degeneration and people with glaucoma. And who have to be monitored, particularly people with glaucoma have to be monitored 6 monthly. To check their pressures, to make sure that they're compliant with treatment and to make sure that the treatment is continuing to work.
Because what is glaucoma?
Glaucoma is, it's a silent condition. That's the number one thing to be aware of. It's a problem where the pressure in your eye is too high, and that in turn affects the nerve at the back of the eye.
Okay.
And if the pressure remains high over a sustained period of time, the nerve is damaged, you lose nerve fibres, and that has an impact on your peripheral field of vision.
Okay.
And that's why people aren't aware of it. Usually they only become aware that they have glaucoma when their central vision starts to go, and at that stage they've had such significant field loss or damage to their nerve. So damage isn't repairable when it is picked up, mm-hmm. but we try and prevent it from progressing over time.
And so, like, if you just go randomly to your optician for your regular checkup, will they check the pressure
in
your eye?
They always check it. Always check it.
And how does the pressure build up in your eye?
Often it's because there's fluid constantly being produced in your eye.
Okay.
And ideally it should leave your eye at the same rate that it's produced.
Okay.
But in many people, it just can't leave the eye at the same rate or as freely as it should, and the pressure builds up.
It builds up, okay. And it doesn't cause pain or anything, it's just silent?
No, the slow type of chronic glaucoma, which most people would have, doesn't cause pain.
That's interesting. My grandmother had macular degeneration and she had to have an injection into her eyeball every month. And she was so cool with it, but I was traumatised because I used to bring her every month for this injection, and then she'd say like, oh, I have these footballs, because they'd be kind of like blurry vision, you know, like there'd be kind of
bubbles
in her vision, and she'd be like pointing at the wall being like, can you see that football? I'm like, no, it's your eye, I can't see it. So she was flat out taking MacuShield Gold, even though at that point she was well past it. Does that mean that I am more likely to get macular degeneration because she had it?
Well, that's your grandmother. Do either of your parents have it yet?
I don't know my paternal line. My mother doesn't have it yet, no.
Okay, and is your grandmother, is that your maternal grandmother?
That's my mum's mother, yeah.
Well, there is a chance, but it'll be increased further if your mum in turn develops.
And how would she know?
If her vision started to deteriorate, because the macula is the part of your retina that's the most important area. It's the area for your central vision. So it's the area that you use when you look directly at something.
Okay.
So you tend to notice, particularly if it's your dominant eye. Sometimes people have some degree of macular degeneration and it's their non-dominant eye, the one that their brain isn't in tune with so much, and they may not notice. Often macular degeneration is picked up on an eye examination for a different reason.
There's wet and dry.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one she had.
Wet, she had wet.
Okay, if she was getting the injection.
Injections, yeah. That means generally there's a bleed in the eye and you're trying to dry up the blood. Yeah.
Fascinating. Something else to look forward to. And do you do laser eye surgery, or are you just dealing with the fallout from ones that go wrong?
No, I do laser eye surgery. Yeah.
For just myopia or whatever?
Myopia, hyperopia, which is longer farsightedness too.
Yeah.
And then some people who aren't suitable for laser and have lens implants instead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. It's something that I've always thought about because I have astigmatism and I'm myopic. And then I'm just afraid of, because I used to go with my nana to this woman to get the injection in her eye, and I was talking to her about laser eye surgery, and she was like, well, look, to be honest, I just see the terrible outcomes of it, so I'm not a proponent. I'm not big into it. So then I never got it done. But do you think it has, would you ever be concerned about the sort of cheaper big box shops that are now doing laser eye surgeries and how they can impact people?
Well, I think, you know, every person has to be very mindful of the reasons why they're having something done.
Yeah.
And also, if they're not sure, regardless of who they go to or what doctor they attend, that they if they feel like they want to get a second opinion, they should get a second opinion.
Yeah.
And if they're not happy or not quite sure, just ask lots of questions. And if in doubt, don't do something.
But yeah, well, that's the thing. So does, you know, the way I, at the moment, I'm short-sighted, right?
Yeah.
But generally people, when they age, they all need to get reading glasses at some point. So if I don't get laser eye surgery, will my myopia eventually go away when the long-sightedness, will it balance out?
Well, basically, if you had eye laser surgery done now to so that you wouldn't be myopic anymore, when you reach your mid-40s, you will need reading glasses.
Okay.
And basically, that's because your own natural lens in your eye, when you're young, your lens in your eye is really flexible. So you can see far away, you can see up close. But as you get older, the lens stiffens, so it can't become really round to focus on things up close anymore.
Okay.
And that generally becomes noticeable in your 40s.
When people are like holding
Starting holding things far away. And then they have to give in and get reading glasses. But being myopic is an advantage in that you will continue to be able to read up close.
Okay.
So if you got your if you had laser done now, you'd still be able to read up close because you're not presbyopic yet. But when you get older, when you're in your 40s, you will become presbyopic, so you will need reading glasses.
But I won't need them if
you,
I don't.
No, if you don't get laser done, you will still, depending on how what your exact prescription is, you'll need them for the distance,
but
you wouldn't need them. For most people who are myopic, won't need them up close.
Oh, that's interesting. So I won't have to have those bifocals, which is good.
Well, you would, to see up close. If you want to see with your glasses on, you'll need bifocals. But you can sit up in bed and read at night with no glasses on.
Okay.
But you wouldn't be able to see across the room.
Okay, so I will need bifocals.
Yeah.
Oh, this is terrible news. Okay. I might get to some listener questions and that might open up some other talking points for us. So this is a broad question, but how does laser eye surgery work?
Well, how it works is it reshapes the front window of your eye, which is the cornea.
Okay.
And if you're myopic or short-sighted, it takes some tissue away from the central part of your cornea. And in that way, it flattens the cornea. So when you look at something, the rays of light that enter your eye, they are the direction is changed by the cornea and they should be focused correctly on your retina.
Mm-hmm.
And so the amount of tissue that's taken away from your cornea is determined by your glasses
prescription.
So if you're only mildly short-sighted or have a small prescription, only a small amount of tissue is taken away. If you're highly short-sighted, a lot of tissue is taken away. And that's why some people may not be suitable for a laser. They either too much tissue would have to be taken away or there wouldn't be enough left behind.
Okay.
There's a certain amount that has to be left behind.
Oh, right. Okay. And is it like really delicate work or is it you just point the laser and press a button?
Well, it depends on exactly what you're having done.
Okay.
There are two ways in which laser surgery is approached. Just to say, actually, the other type of prescription is hyperopic or long-sighted correction. And in that way, the tissue is taken away from the peripheral part of your cornea
to make it steeper. Yes, okay.
Make it steeper. But either way, there are two ways in which laser is approached. If there's LASIK, where a flap is cut in your cornea with a laser.
Yeah.
And then there's LASIK, or PRK, where the surface layer of your eye is removed with laser and then the actual treatment of your prescription is carried out. So the actual treatment of your prescription is the same, it's the same, but it's access to your eye or the way in which the eye is approached is different depending on whether you have LASIK or LASIK.
It's so delicate though, like you're talking about less than millimetres.
Oh yeah, it is, yeah.
Oh
it
my
is.
God.
Yeah.
How to heal corneal abrasions and prevent them from reoccurring?
Okay. Well, if someone has a corneal abrasion, they often have a history of trauma.
Okay.
Sometimes people don't have a history of trauma.
I know someone whose child scratched them in the
eye. Oh, that's a common one.
Okay.
That's one of the most common reasons people come in with a corneal abrasion, those little fingernails. But if it's trauma, and it usually, obviously, then it affects one eye. If someone has no history of trauma, but it affects both eyes, they may have an underlying corneal problem or what's called a corneal dystrophy.
Okay.
But if someone comes in, say, like your friend with their child scratched their eye, the first treatment, first of all, it's extremely painful, as anyone who's ever had an abrasion will know. Your eyelid will be swollen, pouring water. And so they could either have their eye padded for 24 hours or what's called a bandage contact lens could be put in, which just protects the eye and allows the person to open their eye until the cornea heals. But luckily, the cornea does heal quite quickly. But once it's healed, that's just the first step, because when the new cells grow back over the cornea, it'll take a while for them to stick down properly. So there's still a risk of it breaking down and developing what's called a recurrent erosion. And if they develop a recurrent erosion, what generally happens is that the person's eye dries out when they're asleep at night. So they wake up in the morning and eye really sore, watering, painful. So the treatment then for anyone with a corneal abrasion, once it's initially healed, is to try and prevent a recurrent erosion. So just to put lubricant drops in their eyes every night going to bed.
Okay.
For about 6 months.
Well, that's a long time.
Yeah.
I had laser eye surgery in 2008, but I'm wearing glasses for the last 4 or 5 years. Is it recommended to do it a second time?
Well, it depends. It's some you that person who asked the question would have to have an assessment to make sure that their eye was healthy, that they had enough corneal tissue to allow them to have it done, and that they don't have dry eyes. But yes, they can have it done again.
Does the corneal tissue grow back?
No.
No, okay.
But in general, when someone is having their initial surgery, you'd always allow that they, if they ever needed it done again, that they would have enough tissue left behind. So the younger someone is when they have it done, and the more short-sighted they are when they have it done, the higher the chance that they will need it done again.
Okay. If there's glaucoma in the family, when do you need to start getting checked for it?
Generally about early 40s.
Okay. Blurred vision, given eye drops for dry eyes. So many friends have the same thing at the moment. Why are there so many? Well, we talked about that.
Yeah,
it's a lifestyle.
It's lifestyle
thing.
Yeah.
So taking a break from your computer.
Absolutely.
And are you saying like take a break from the computer and close your eyes, or take a break from your computer and look at something far away?
Just look far away.
Okay.
Just look far away.
Okay,
yeah.
Go for a walk.
And in general, overall, try to use, you know, reduce screen time.
Right. I had LASIK 6 years ago, but vision worsened after pregnancy. Is it okay to redo surgery or better not to?
Because you could have it done again.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Does pregnancy impact your vision?
Well, hormones can change it temporarily, but no, not really.
Not really.
No.
Because it seems to be changing everything. I have to get new shoes. My shoe size has changed. Everything has changed. Any supplements to take to avoid getting macular degeneration or to slow progression because it's in the family?
Yeah, there are lots of supplements readily available over the counter in the pharmacy.
So just ask for any of them.
Absolutely.
And is it, are they based, like, should you also be taking omegas? Is it that kind of thing? Or
they're
specific for
macular? No, specific ones. All those things would be in the ones that are specially formulated for people, yeah.
Can you be fully asleep getting laser eye surgery?
No.
No.
You need to be able to fixate on the target.
Oh, wow.
To have this treatment centred on the middle of the centre of your pupil.
Oh. Can dry eye cause lasting damage?
It can't. Depending on the type of dry eye that most people would have, doesn't cause lasting damage.
Okay.
The type of dry eye that can cause a problem is if someone can't close their eye fully at night for some problem.
I knew a man who used to sleep with his eyes open, and it was so bizarre. And I visited him in hospital once, and I was like, "Oh, hiya!" And he was just fast asleep.
Yeah, most people, they have a thing called a Bell's phenomenon. So if someone closed their eye and you forcefully try to open it, their eye, the cornea should actually disappear up under their eyelid.
Okay.
And that's what happens to people when they're asleep at night. So, but what can happen to some people, just say they have an eyelid problem and they can't close their eye properly, and the cornea is exposed.
Then it can dry.
It can become dry, and then that can be a really serious condition.
We all know neck and back pain can be so debilitating. The good news is the vast majority of spinal problems can be treated successfully by regaining movement, flexibility and strength. Whether you have an existing condition or a recent injury, Mater Private has centres of excellence for spinal care in Dublin, Cork and Limerick to provide you with comprehensive diagnosis, treatment, surgery and rehabilitation. With daily clinics in 5 locations, it means you can access the expert spine care that you need without having far to travel, no matter where you live. Making the right move is important, and when you have neck or back pain, you want to be treated by Ireland's leading spine experts. You want a team who can look after everything spinal, from the straightforward to the most complex conditions. For everything spinal, visit matterprivate.ie to find out more.
Hello, my name is Dave Coffey, and I'm the host of Phoning It In, the hilarious improvised phone-in show. It's like Joe Duffy's Live Line, except we make it all up on the spot. We've got a back catalogue of over 100 episodes featuring some of the best comedy performers in the country. People like Kevin McGahern, Alison Spittle, Killian Sunderman, Shane Dan Byrne, Joanne McNally, Michael Fry, Emma Doran, Peter McGann, Hannah Mamelis, Tony Cantwell, and so many more. Join me, Dave Coffey, for Phoning It In right here on the Headstuff Podcast Network.
What are your thoughts on using breast milk for eye infections in young babies?
Well, I've heard of that. I've never recommended it. But I mean, that's not to say that, it, you know, people do that.
Yeah. I mean, I did it, but I don't know if it did anything more than, you know, saline solution would have done.
Yeah, to be honest, I mean, the main thing really, depending on the type of infection, if sometimes a baby just has a sticky eye from a blocked tear duct, mm-hmm. and then antibiotics, if the eye is white and it's a sticky eye, cool boiled water is the best. Some parents bring their child to me who's had recurrent infections. They get recurrent prescriptions for antibiotic, but that's not going to work. Cool boiled water is all they need. And massage of the over the lacrimal sac, which is, you know, the area, the inner corner of, over, where you'd put concealer in there. That's where the lacrimal, that's where the sac is, where that needs to be massaged up to 10 times a day.
Okay.
But unless the eyeball itself is white, they don't need an antibiotic. But yeah, if breast milk would, you know, you have to try it, that's okay.
Anything to help my son with nystagmus?
I'm afraid not, no.
What is that?
It's really the fine tuning of the muscles controlling the eye, and it's really fine movement. Sometimes for a lot of people they have it, but you, unless you were really looking at somebody really closely, you don't see the to and fro movement.
Is it sort of like watching someone who's looking out the window of a train?
Yeah. It's very fine movements. Sometimes it's an isolated condition, just called congenital motor nystagmus. Often it's quite rapid eye movement when the child is born, and then it can dampen down or become much less noticeable during the first year of life. But it's also associated with other conditions like albinism or children who have poor vision from birth.
I had one cataract done with Katrina before COVID. I need the second one done. Do I need another referral?
No. Just contact my secretary.
Just contact your secretary. Yeah. When should I be worried about eye floaters?
Well, a lot of people have floaters that they've had for a long time.
What is that? Is that like what my grandmother was seeing?
Yeah, but that was a temporary thing after the injection because
yes,
there were bubbles. But a lot of people, particularly on bright sunny days or in a room with a white background, they'll see these little things floating around in their eyes. And if someone's had them for a long time and they haven't changed, it's nothing to worry about. But if somebody, where the cause for concern arises, if they suddenly develop out of the blue, and they may or may not be associated with what's called flashing lights. And people say to me, well, what's a flashing light? I say, well, if it happened to you, you'd notice. Usually then people notice it in dim light conditions. They'll see flickering. So if someone has, so a new onset of floaters, with or without flashing lights, they should get their eyes checked.
From someone like you or just into an optician?
Well, they can go to an optician, but the optician may often refer them on.
Refer them on, okay.
Because it could signify a tear in the retina.
Okay.
Usually it's a change in the jelly of the eye, which happens as people get older. It's called a posterior vitreous detachment, not to be confused with a retinal detachment. It's the jelly of your eye pulling away from your retina. And where that's common, and that's often gives rise to those symptoms.
Okay.
But what can happen is that when that jelly pulls away, it can pull on the retina and cause a tear.
That's where the
concern arises. So in that instance, if it's found early, the tear, it can be sealed off with a laser.
Oh, right.
But if the tear isn't detected, it can result in a retinal detachment.
Okay.
So it's advisable if they're new floaters or associated with flashing lights to get their eye checked.
Do you have any suggestions for nighttime winter driving? Surgery, glasses, lenses, it's a nightmare. I kind of get this as well, like the glare of other lights coming against me.
Yeah.
In winter at nighttime is a lot. And then also like the winter sun.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the age of the patient. If it's an older patient, it could be due to a degree of cataract forming that's causing it. But if it's a long-standing issue, also if people come in with very dry eyes or inflammation surface of the eye, it can cause night driving problems. But in general, if their glasses need to be up to date, because if you're slightly undercorrected in your glasses, it can contribute to glare at night. But it's a difficult one to treat for many patients.
My dad needs cataract surgery, but he's terrified. How hard or easy is it these days?
Well, it's an operation inside the eye. And so a lot of people are really anxious.
And you have to be awake?
You don't have to be awake, but 99% of people are awake, and he can have sedation.
Okay.
But it's an operation inside the eye. Generally, two openings are made into the eye, and then instruments are put inside, and ultrasound, because people often ask if it's done with a laser, it's not.
Yeah.
Ultrasound is used to break up the cataract. And then when the cataract has been removed, a new lens goes in.
Okay.
Everyone gets a new lens, and most people don't know that happened, but everyone gets a new lens.
People just think it was cleared off their old lens.
A lot of people think it's a film on the surface of their eye, but it's actually not. It's inside your eye behind the pupil.
Oh, wow.
Where the cataract is. So he'd be anxious, but in the vast majority of people, it's straightforward.
And what would cause cataracts in a 40-year-old? This person has a history of severe preeclampsia, which is high blood pressure in pregnancy.
Yeah, that wouldn't cause it, but it depends. Cataracts can develop in people in their 40s. Often, and not always, they're well, things in general that can cause cataract at that age. It could be steroid use that can increase the incidence of cataract. Also, short-sighted people, people who are quite short-sighted or myopic, tend to can often develop cataracts at an earlier age.
My three-year-old has astigmatism in both eyes. Can anything be done?
Glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the only thing.
Yeah, that's what I have. But I didn't get my glasses till I was 26. I remember coming out of the... My grandmother took me for dinner and I was squinting at the menu. She was like, you need to get glasses. I was like, I definitely don't. And I went to the optician with her, Margaret Barrett and Cabra. And Margaret was like, you don't drive, do you? And I was like, I do, yeah. And she was like, you shouldn't be driving. You really shouldn't. You need this. And I remember getting my glasses and coming out of her opticians in Cabra and looking across at this tree outside Clark's Bakery and seeing the individual leaves on the tree. And I was like, oh my God, I did not know you should have been able to see this detail. So yeah, glasses for astigmatism. Are there any new treatments for macular degeneration? My mother has it in both eyes progressing, and will it lead to blindness over time? She's 73.
Well, it depends on the type. There are various new treatments for wet macular degeneration. They're often based around the same type of medication, but they may work slightly differently. But for dry macular degeneration, unfortunately, it's vitamins. You know, the supplements are really the only way.
And yeah, that just slows it.
It slows it down. It does. Okay. It does. But, you know, the thing about macular degeneration, it can have a devastating effect, obviously, because it's central vision, what people need to read and to see things. But a person will never lose all their sight.
Okay.
Because they'll always have their peripheral vision. Okay. And often, sometimes people can adapt a little bit to look slightly to the side of things to see better. It's a very difficult problem.
What should we be mindful of to prevent damaging our sight? For example, screen time or wearing cheap glasses. Is wearing cheap sunglasses not protection enough for our eyes during summer?
Well, most sunglasses nowadays have a CE mark, so they, you know, even the cheap ones should be fine to wear. Mm-hmm. What was the other part of the question?
Things we should be mindful of to prevent damaging our eyesight.
Just taking breaks from screens is the number one these days.
Okay.
Yeah.
And healthy diet or?
Healthy diet. Smoking is another one.
Yeah.
Smoking is bad.
All
particularly,
the doctors.
Yeah, if you have a family history of macular degeneration.
Okay.
Smoking is not
really
good.
Bad.
Yeah.
It could. I mean, I've never heard someone saying that smoking is good.
No,
for something,
I know.
But
it's one thing that you might not think that it's going to affect your eyes. You know about lungs. You know about the other organs. But it can affect your eyes and macular degeneration quite significantly.
Loads of things here. Not a question, but she is my son's consultant and she is fabulous. She is an amazing pediatric ophthalmologist. How does she feel carrying on the great work of Professor O'Keefe? How do you feel about that?
Gosh, well, you know, I often say he taught me pretty much everything I know, so I worked with him for so many years, but...
He was a great guy.
He was
amazing.
He
once saw my grandmother on St. Stephen's Day. I'd say arguably too committed to his work.
Well, you know, I mean, people appreciated it so much. I mean, I hear it every day. So I really appreciate everybody, you know, thinking the world of him, because I think we all did.
Yeah, may he rest in peace. What is the most common surgery and the least common surgery that you've done?
Well, every so often you have to do something that's a variation of, say, for example, certain types of operations for a turn in the iris squint. Sometimes quite unusual ones come in that I see, and I'd have to do something that wouldn't be a common operation. So I wouldn't have done it often, but it's something that nobody would have done very often, you know.
Yeah.
So it's something that's
just quite rare for that person,
absolutely.
For in general. Katrina has looked after my daughter. She's just the loveliest person. Blocked tear duct since birth in a 15-month-old. Why is surgery the last resort to rectify?
Because, well, the main reason, it's a general anaesthetic.
Okay.
And we always try and avoid a general anaesthetic in a
but
small child.
But it's also probably going to have scar tissue maybe, wouldn't it?
No, not really. It doesn't. But the reason we wait for a child with a blocked tear duct is most of them will get better on their own in the first year of life.
Right, okay.
So massage is really important. And as I was saying to you, that area in, you know, in the corner,
yeah,
not down the nose, but that kind of darker area, press really firmly on it, because there's a tear duct that leads from the inner corner of your eye down into your nose. And during development, that's not open. But for most babies, by the time they're born, a little hollow or passage is formed down through the centre of that. So that when they do start to produce tears, the tears drain down into their nose. But in some children, it's not open. There can be a little membrane. So that little tear sac there and in the corner swells up. So if you press on it and massage it, you know, press on your small finger and small baby, it can force the tears down. And up to 10 times a day that needs to be done. Okay. So most of them will get better on their own. So we give it a chance for them to get, for it to get it better on its own. And it's, if it's still there at 12, you know, by under 12 months of age, we'll probe.
Professor O'Keefe performed laser eye surgery on my 1 kilogram baby. He will have trained a legend. Amazing. Has Dr. Kerwin treated kids who had cleft palate for sight issues?
Yes, some of them do develop sight issues.
Okay.
So some of them, what we'd always have to watch out for is a child who has a history of cleft palate and if they become myopic. Because that can be, there could be an underlying association there that needs to be checked out.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Is it true that there's no point in getting laser after the age of 40?
It depends on what the person wants.
Okay.
As long as they know that, it just say they're getting it done because they want to improve their distance vision. If they're myopic, at least they, once they know and that they're going to be wearing reading glasses. A lot of people are happy with that.
Yeah.
And then there are also people who are long-sighted or far-sighted who come in. And again, but a lot of those aren't suitable at the time, but they may be suitable when they're older. But yeah, it totally depends on the person.
Okay. My son is 5 and has really bad dry eyes. He's blinking very hard. What can I do to help?
Well, diet, omega-3 in his diet. So oily fish, flaxseed, milled flaxseed, sprinkle it on his cereal, put it in his yogurts. It's less common in children. Lubricant drops can help. Once he's been checked and everything else is, you know, his eyes are otherwise healthy, which they probably are, a lubricant drop will help. Now, lots of children don't want you to come near them with a drop. So there is a lubricant spray you can get, and he'd close his eyes and you spray it on his closed eyelids, and that would help.
That's presuming that she's checked out.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, he's otherwise healthy child, yeah.
My 8-year-old has JIA. Don't know what that is. No flare since age 4. Had asymptomatic uveitis once. When does annual eye check stop?
He's 8.
He's 8.
Well, it depends on the overall level of control and if his rheumatologist, depending on the treatment.
Juvenile infant arthritis, yeah, that's what it is.
So it depends on, if he's still in the hospital and still under the care of a rheumatologist, it's still advisable that he has ongoing yearly eye checks, because it's much better to be to do it and not need it rather than be sorry afterwards. That so he'll be seen for the foreseeable future.
What damage are screens doing to children's eyes?
They're going to cause an epidemic of myopia or short-sightedness.
Okay.
So
they'll all need glasses.
A significant number of them will. So,
and is that just screens that they're holding, or like?
So yeah, screens that they're holding are worse than television.
Than television.
Yeah. Okay. So, a lot more children are going to become short-sighted because of all the computer and screen use. But nowadays, if children come, the younger a child becomes myopic or short-sighted, the more short-sighted they're going to become.
Oh, do you get progressively more
short-sighted? You get progressively worse because short-sightedness develops as your eyes grow.
Okay.
So if you develop it as a small child and your eyes, and you still have a lot of growing to do, you're going to become more short-sighted. So children are actually meant to be the other way around. They're meant to be long-sighted. That's the normal state for a child's eyes. And what happens is that they tend to grow out of their long-sightedness over time. And then they can go the other way and become short-sighted. So if a child becomes myopic earlier, they're going to end up quite short-sighted. So nowadays there are means to try and control the progression of the myopia, because we know it's inevitably going to get worse. They can get myopia control glasses from their optician, or what I often do is I put them on a dilute concentration of atropine, and that slows the growth of the eye.
Okay.
And it's really effective. But it has to be put into the child's eyes every night a few years.
And how is looking at the screen making them short-sighted? Is it just that the muscles are focusing so close and
Absolutely.
They just get used to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so playing outdoors and looking at things far away.
Yeah, natural sunlight is one of those things that's really important.
Okay.
And has been shown to slow the progression of myopia, if we want to get more of it here.
Yeah.
But the other things are a good light when they're reading. So not just in the room, but a light shining over their shoulder onto a page. So no reading under the duvet at night time.
Yeah.
So reduce screen time, outdoor play, and a good light when they're reading are really important.
Great. Why would a child suddenly develop a squint? And then one more question after that.
Well, it depends on the age of the child, but often it can be because they're long-sighted or far-sighted. And so if a child suddenly develops a turn, as my own son did when he was three. Just came, went, left the house, came back half an hour later, and his eye turned in. But
you're joking,
yeah. So often
what was how, like, what had happened?
Well, his eye suddenly, it's just one of those things. Nobody knows exactly what happens, but he turned out he was quite long sighted.
Okay,
and that happens to many children. They're able to control it for a period of time, and then suddenly their brain just—it's like this.
I can't do this anymore.
I can't do this anymore. Often it can be associated with being sick or tired.
Okay,
and so, or in other children, it can be very slowly developing. The parents might say, oh, is the eye turning? Or maybe not. Yeah. And then it goes on for a while. But in other children, it's much more acute. So they come to me. The first thing is to check inside their eyes, their retina, check their vision, check inside their eyes to make sure everything is okay. And then to check the focusing power of their eye. A lot of them are long-sighted or far-sighted. So in a number of children, by getting glasses, it stops their eye from turning.
Okay.
Now, when they take off the glasses, the eye will turn again. But that's the type of turn. It means that it's a focusing issue that's causing the turn.
Yeah.
And those children don't need surgery if they're straight with their glasses. Then there's another group of children, even they may not need glasses at all. Or if you give them glasses, it makes no difference. So it's a muscle problem. Okay. And they need surgery.
Okay. And is that when you see kids going around with a patch?
No, that's a different thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So a patch, some children with a turn wear a patch. And that's because the eye that's turning is a weaker eye, in that the vision isn't good.
Okay, so they're trying to train it.
Exactly. Well, it's to make the brain. So part of I always say to parents, the part of your brain that controls vision is at the back of your brain. And there are specific nerve pathways that go from the eye to that part of the brain. And in a child, say, for example, a child who's failed their school eye test and the vision is weak in one eye, the brain has switched off from that eye to a degree.
Okay.
So you can give the child glasses or... But the brain is still switched off from that eye. So okay. You cover the good eye to force the brain to use
switch
the weaker eye
on.
To get the nerve pathways to grow.
Okay.
And that's why age is really important in a child with an eye problem, because the brain is capable of change. It can form new pathways and it can also lose them. But it starts to lose its ability gradually over time. And we usually say around 8 years of age.
It's kind of the same as language acquisition, yeah, like the younger they are.
Yeah, the closer you get to eight, the less the harder it is to improve the vision. So that's why if a child is wearing a patch, it's to improve the vision.
And did your son need surgery or just glasses?
He needed surgery and glasses.
Oh, did you do it?
No,
you didn't.
Professor Keefe did.
Oh, fair play to him. And then finally, should all kids get their eyes checked, or is that already a service that's happening in schools?
It is happening in schools, but one issue that I always know, I have is that children often these days start school a bit older than they did before. So my advice to people is always if there's a family history. So the most common reason children fail their school eye test is because their vision is weak in one eye.
Okay.
So no one would ever have realised there's a problem with the other eye because they can do everything.
Yeah.
And often that's because of a difference in the focusing power of the two eyes. So they might need glasses for one eye, whereas they don't for the other. And that often runs in families.
Okay.
So family history is really important. So if there's a family history of a problem, often people are really aware, but sometimes they're not. It's important to get their child's eyes checked when they're about 2 years of age.
And is that possible?
Like,
can you get a two-year-old to sit and...
You can actually check their eyes when they're asleep.
Oh, wow.
Under general anaesthetic. So often people hold off coming to see me because they think, well, it'd be possible. Look, it'd be possible to hold him, to check his eyes. But we don't, even if a child is, you can check that they're fixing and following.
Yeah.
You don't check their what's called their acuity on a chart in the really young children.
Yeah.
You might be able to check it with the two eyes open, but you can't check individual eyes. But as long as you cover one eye and they're fixing and following, you can actually tell what their prescription is. You put drops in, and often you have the parents have to help hold them while you just put lenses up in front of their eyes and determine exactly what their prescription is.
Okay.
Because if you have to wait until they were old enough to comply, it would be too late.
They'd be blind, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Katrina Curran, that was absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much. Lots of other listener questions, but mostly this box is full of praise for you and your ability to do your job with young paediatric cases. Thank you so much for joining us in studio.
Thank you for having me, Stephanie.
And thank you for listening to another episode of Basically. Our music is by Only Ruin. Our graphic design is by Cathal O'Gara. We are produced by Hilary Barry and we're part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network. See you next week.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.